Welcome, everybody, to Inspiration in 10, where we share inspirational stories, articles, and Torah thoughts in memory of my father, Rav Gershon ben Harav ben Sion. This week in South Surrey, Shabbat Parshat Korach starts at 8:59. As we speak tonight, tens of thousands of men, women, and children are converging upon the holy resting place of our Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Mendel Schneerson of blessed memory, whose yard site is on Gimel Tammuz this Shabbat, June 16th. I do not feel equal to the task of speaking about our Rebbe, who was larger than life and who inspired me, my husband, and approximately 5,000 colleague families in 101 countries, which does not yet include North Korea. I hope you will therefore indulge me tonight as I read from the words of Rabbi Yossi Jacobson in an article which combines this week's Torah portion of Korach with the anniversary of the Rebbe's passing. It's a baffling story. The portion of Korach tells of the test of the staffs, the sticks, conducted when there were those who contested Aaron's appointment to the high priesthood. God instructed Moses to take a staff from each tribe, each inscribed with the name of the tribe's leader. Aaron's name was written on the Levi's tribe staff. The staffs were placed overnight in the Holy of Holies in the sanctuary. When they were removed the following morning, the entire nation beheld that Aaron's staff had blossomed overnight and borne fruit, demonstrating that Aaron was God's choice for the high priest. What was the meaning of this strange miracle? God could have chosen many ways to demonstrate the authenticity of Aaron's position. In fact, three previous incidents had already proven this very truth. The swallowing of Korach and his fellow rebels who staged a revolt against Moses and Aaron. The burning of 250 leaders who led the mutiny. And the epidemic that spread amongst those who accused Moses and Aaron of killing the nation. What was the point and the message of the blossoming stick? One answer I heard from my teacher was this. The blossoming of the staff was meant not so much to prove who the high priest is, that was already established in those other three earth-shattering miracles, but rather to demonstrate what it takes to be chosen as a high priest of God and to explain why it was Aaron who was chosen for this position. What are the qualifications required by a spiritual leader of the Jewish people? Before being severed from its roots, this staff grew. It produced leaves and was full of sap and vitality. But now, severed from its roots, it had become dry and lifeless. The primary quality of a Kohen Gadol, of a high priest, of a man of God, is his or her ability to transform lifeless sticks into gardens. The real leader is a person who sees the possibility for growth and life where others see only stagnation and lifelessness. The Jewish high priest perceives even in a dead stick the potential for rejuvenation. How relevant this story is to our generation. Following the greatest tragedy ever to have struck our people, the Holocaust, the Jewish people appeared like a lifeless stick. Mounds and mounds of ashes, the only remains of the 6 million, left a nation devastated to its core. An entire world went up in smoke. What happened next will one day be told as one of the great acts of reconstruction in the history of mankind. Holocaust survivors and refugees set about building on new soil the world they had seen go up in the smoke of Auschwitz and Treblinka. One of the remarkable individuals who spearheaded this revival was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rabbi Menachem Schneerson, whose yard site, his 24th yard site, is on this Shabbos, the 3rd of Tammuz, June 16th. The Rebbe, together with other great Jewish sages and leaders, refused to yield to despair. While others responded to the Holocaust by building memorials, endowing lectureships, convening conferences and writing books, all vital and noble tributes to create memories of a tree that once lived but was now dead, the Rebbe urged every person he could touch to bring the stick back to life, to marry and to have lots of children, and to rebuild Jewish life in every way possible. He built schools, communities, yeshivot, and encouraged and inspired countless Jews to do the same. He opened his hearts to an orphan generation, imbuing it with hope, vision, and determination. He became the most well-known address for scores of activists, rabbis, philanthropists, leaders, influential people, and laymen and women from all walks of life, giving them the courage and the confidence to reconstruct a shattered universe. He sent out emissaries to virtually every Jewish community in the world to help rekindle the Jewish smile at a titanic river of tears threatened to obliterate. The Lubavitcher Rebbe urged his beloved people to use the horrors of destruction as an impetus to generate the greatest Jewish renaissance and to create rejuvenation. He gazed at a dead staff and he saw in it the potential for life. His new home, the United States, was a country that until then had dissolved Jewish identity. It was, as they used to say in those days, a treifene medina, a non-kosher land. Yet the Rebbe saw the possibility of using American culture as a medium for new forms of Jewish activity, using modern means to convey Yiddishkeit. The Rebbe realized that the secularity of the modern world concealed a deep yearning for spirituality, and he knew how to address it. Where others saw the crisis of a dead staff, he saw opportunity for a new wave of renewal and redemption. Rabbi Yehuda Krinsky, one of the Rebbe's secretaries, related the following incident. It was about 1973 when the widow of Jacques Lifshitz, the renowned sculptor, had come for a private audience with the Lubavitcher Rebbe shortly after her husband's sudden passing. In the course of her meeting with the Rebbe, she mentioned that when her husband died, he was nearing completion of a massive sculpture of a phoenix in abstract, a work commissioned by Hadassah Women's Organization for the Hadassah Hospital on Mount Scopus in Yerushalayim. As an artist and sculptor of her own, in her own right, she said that she would have liked to complete her husband's work, but she told the Rebbe she had been advised by Jewish leaders that the phoenix is a non-Jewish symbol. It could never be placed in Yerushalayim. I was standing near the door of the Rebbe's office that night when he called for me and he asked that I bring the book of Job from his bookshelf, which I did. That's Eov. The Rebbe turned to chapter 29, verse 18. It says, I shall multiply my days like the chol. And then the Rebbe proceeded to explain to Mrs. Lifshitz the Midrashic commentary on this verse, which described the chol as a bird that lives for 1,000 years, then dies, and is later resurrected from its ashes. Clearly, then, a Jewish symbol. Mrs. Lifshitz was absolutely delighted. The project was completed soon thereafter. In his own way, the Rebbe had brought new hope to this broken widow, and in the recurring theme of his life, he did the same for the spirit of the Jewish people, which he raised from the ashes of the Holocaust to new, invigorated life. He attempted to reenact the miracle of the blossoming staff every day of his life and every person he came in contact with. And I want to share with you one more story of the Rebbe. Rabbi Beryl Baumgarten, he passed away in 1978. He was a Jewish educator in an Orthodox religious yeshiva in Brooklyn, New York, prior to relocating to Buenos Aires. He once wrote a letter to the Rebbe asking for advice. Each Shabbat afternoon, when he would meet up with his students for a study session, one student would walk into the room smelling from cigarette smoke. Clearly, he was smoking on Shabbat. His influence may cause his religious classmates to also cease keeping Shabbos. Rabbi Baumgarten was concerned. Must I expel him from the school, even with the lack of clear evidence that he is violating the Shabbat? The Rebbe's answer was no more than a scholarly reference. See Avot de Rabbi Nassen, chapter 12. That's it. Let me explain to you. Avot de Rabbi Nassen is a Talmudic tractate, an addendum to the ethics of our fathers, composed in the fourth century by a Talmudic sage known as Rabbi Nassim HaBavli. I was curious to understand the Rebbe's response. Rabbi Baumgarten was looking for practical advice, and the Rebbe was sending him to an ancient text. I opened the book to that particular chapter. I found a story told there about Aaron, our very own high priest in Israel. Aaron, the sages relayed, brought back many Jews from a life of sin to a life of purity. He was the first one in Jewish history to make Ba'alei Tshuva, to inspire Jews, to re-embrace their heritage, faith, and inner spiritual mission. But unlike today, during Aaron's time, to be a sinner, you had to be a real no-goodnik. Because the Jews of his generation have seen God in his full glory, and to rebel against the Torah way of life at that time was a sign of true betrayal and carelessness. How then did Aaron do it? He would greet each person warmly. Even a grand sinner would be greeted by Aaron with tremendous grace and love. Aaron would embrace these so-called Jewish sinners with endless warmth and respect. The following day, when this person would crave to sin, he would say to himself, "How will I be able to look Aaron in the eyes after I commit such a serious sin? I'm too ashamed. He holds me in such high moral esteem. How can I deceive him and let him down?" And this person would abstain from immoral behavior. We come here full circle. Aaron was a leader, a high priest, because even his staff blossomed. He never gave up on the dried out sticks. He never looked at someone and said, "This person is a lost cause. He's completely cut off from his tree of any without any possibility of growth. He's dry, he's brittle, he's lifeless." For Aaron, even dry sticks would blossom and produce fruit. This is the story related in Avot de Rabbi Nassim. This was the story the Lubavitcher Rebbe wanted Rabbi Baumgarten to study and internalize. "Should I expel the child from school?" was his question. He is, Jewishly speaking, a dried out, one tough stick. The response of an Aaron, our Rebbe, is this: love him to pieces, embrace him with every fiber of your being, open your heart to him, cherish him, and shower him with warmth and affection. Appreciate him, respect him, and let him feel that you really care for him. See in him or her that which he or she may not be able to see in themselves at this very moment. View him as a great human being, and you know what? He will become just that. This, again, is the sign of a true leader. Where others might have seen a spiritually arid staff, a Rebbe, our Rebbe, saw the potential of the creation of the most beautiful and inspiring garden. If only every educator, parent, rabbi, teacher, and leader could emulate this example, until the day when our entire world's true potential will blossom and emerge in its full glory. Thank you, everyone, for joining me in elevating the airwaves, Le'iloi Nishmat, and in memory of my father, Harav Gershom ben Harav ben Zion. Please remember, a little light dispels a lot of darkness.